Hello and welcome to episode 58 of Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. I'm David Maguire and I'm creative director at Radix Communications. And as ever, I'm joined by our founder, lead copywriter, and as of recently, star of London billboards, Fiona Campbell-House.
Hello. I don't think it's just me that's the star of London billboards. I think you're definitely on them as well.
Yeah, but I'm in the background.
As are a number of others of the Radix team. So, yes, not just me.
Oh, that. Yeah, it's a lovely thing anyway. This month, we'll be talking about how marketers can get the best possible value for money from a copywriter. We'll be sharing a few of the ways our clients try to get more for their budget, places where it's possible you might make a saving, and other places where you definitely shouldn't. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, please feel free to email us. It's podcast@radix-communications.com. Or tweet us at RadixCom. That's RadixCom. I know it's Radix, but there is only one D because we're gangster like that. So Fiona, before we start, I mean, would you like to tell the listeners about how come, if they're in London, they might be seeing our gurning faces everywhere at major railway stations?
Well, I guess they may have seen our gurning faces at railway stations because I don't think they're there anymore, tragically. Oh. But this was a lovely campaign, actually. It wasn't our ad campaign. This was a campaign for Invest in Cornwall, which is an organisation that's looking to attract more businesses to invest in Cornwall, to set up businesses here or to relocate here. And so we were there as an example, a shining example of the kind of business that it's possible to build in Cornwall here by the river with our lovely scenery and everything.
Oh,
so it was a very nice campaign.
It's super, and it was nice to be right in the background those while you were kicking off a brand new modelling career, I think.
Yeah, I think a very short-lived modelling career.
So moving on to this month's topic about getting value for money from copywriters. I mean, I think that everyone, you know, always wants to get more from their marketing budget. Do you think that that's something that has changed lately? Do you think our clients are more price sensitive than they were, or less price sensitive? Do people understand the value of spending money on copywriting, do you think?
Yeah, it's more the latter thing. So I don't think it's about being price sensitive. I think it is an understanding of the value you can get from copywriting, and I think it has changed massively over the past sort of 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. I think with the advent of content marketing and marketers coming to realise that, you know, if they pay money to get really good standout copywriting, then they're going to see better returns from that content than if they'd gone to like sort of cheap copywriter from maybe one of the content mills you can get online. I think views have changed radically over the past 5 years, and there's a lot more appreciation now of the value of good copy.
Do you think there's now content marketing's established, been around for a while, there's more of an evidence base for that now? People have tried the cheap and nasty way, they've tried the high quality way, and they've actually seen a difference in their results.
I think there must be, because we used to get, I mean, the thing that I always come back to is around blogs. And we always used to get real pushback on the prices that we were charging for the blogs that we write. And there was generally a sense that you could get the blogs written cheaper elsewhere, and the results would be the same. But I think there must be now a base of evidence that shows that, you know, if you invest the money, you get better returns, because we don't get that pushback anymore. In fact, I mean, you wrote quite a lengthy blog post about how we were putting our blog writing prices up. And that had a really positive reception amongst our clients and potential clients. And, you know, since we put those prices up and we've been sending out our new price list to potential new clients, we haven't had any real pushback on those prices at all. So
no, there was no sort of drop off in the blog demand. I mean, it feels like in the office. I mean, it was a sort of a bit of a deep breath moment writing blog post. Kind of, you know, however much bravado we had in the stand first, but we know that our clients will love the fact we're charging them more than we ever have for writing a blog post, and these are the reasons. It was a kind of This feels like a moment that we're slightly exposed.
Yes, and I think it was more, wasn't it, that we hadn't necessarily massively put our prices up for blog posts, but we'd added further options for even longer and more in-depth and better research blog posts, which, because the kind of scope of work is similar to doing an ebook, the pricing is now similar to an ebook, yeah.
And I think it maybe makes a difference that we're so niche with what we do. I think, I mean, you know, finding good writing is hard enough. Finding good writing in B2B technology, I think, has got to be really difficult, where people, you know, will really appreciate the value and the difference that makes, I guess.
Yeah, and especially because B2B technology is one of those sectors where content marketing has really taken off. You know, almost all B2B tech firms are doing some form of content marketing now, which means, you know, as was predicted in things like Velocity Slideshare crap and in Mark Schaefer's, what did he call it, content shock, that there would eventually just be so much content that a lot of it would just get lost in the noise. And so, you know, the bar's been set ever higher for the kind of copy and the kind of writing that is going to stand out. So, I mean, yeah, that's definitely happened in B2B tech.
I can't believe it's 5 years since that crap SlideShare came out.
I know, but it was just so true then and is still so true now. So, yes, it was a very prescient piece of work, that was.
The follow-up blog posts on it, the three anniversary blog posts, have been almost painfully good to it. Just reading them go, yeah.
Yeah, so the most recent one, when we were talking about it the other day, weren't we, why good people make crap content, like lots of that rang true.
So true.
And actually, I think part of that is, or at least one of those reasons is relevant to this podcast, because, you know, it's budget. And, you know, are you going to put enough money aside or invest as much as you need to in getting a really good piece of content? And if you don't, then you won't get one.
No, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I was reading a blog post yesterday about the three things all content marketing must have if it's going to work. Three things every content marketer needs. You know, what do you think point one was? Quality content.
Absolutely.
You've got to have the good stuff. Otherwise, it's just not gonna work.
Yeah.
But you know, equally, you know, every year you see in the the content marketing institute's research that they do with marketing profs, and every year they say, are you going to do more content than you did last year? Yep. Are you going to spend more money on it? Nope.
Yes.
Budget stays the same or goes down. Volume of content produced goes up.
Yes.
What do you think's happening?
Results diminish.
And that's the thing that I really like about the Orbit Media research around the length, not just the length of time and the length and depth of a blog post, but the time that people spend, the amount they're also prepared to spend on editing and review. Mm-hmm. All of those things have a strong correlation to good results.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just this is what people are doing on average. This is what the top performing people do. This is what everyone else does.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's all about time at the end of the day. I mean, we'll probably come on to talk about, you know, time-based pricing and value-based pricing, but there has to be an investment of time in order to produce a really good piece of content. And that generally means a corresponding investment of money. Yeah.
I'm very conscious that we're talking about how people can you know, save money or make their budget go further.
We're just trying to persuade everyone to spend more.
Yeah, it's just like, no, don't do it. Just spend more. Just
give us
spend
all
more.
Your money. Just give it all. To
but I am interested in the pricing strategy for the business. Obviously, I've been here a couple of years, but Radix positioning, the fact that we work off a price list, those things were already here when I arrived. Now, I think that's something that's still quite unusual. How did you arrive at the decision to do that?
To create a price list?
Yeah.
So that came from, well, first of all, we wanted to cut down on the amount of time it took us to put a quote together because that, I mean, as you know, that can be a very time-consuming process.
Uh-huh.
And so, well, we had our project management system in which our writers enter the amount of time they've spent on every task that they're given. And they're very good at it, I should say. As an agency, I think we're pretty good at putting our time in. So we had a lot of data about how long certain projects take us to do on average. And so we could look back over 2, 3, 4 years and look at the average length of time it would take us to produce an ebook from start to finish. And based on that, just put a fixed price against it. So whenever anybody came to us and asked us for sort of 2,500-word ebook, we wouldn't have to every time kind of run through, okay, well, how long do we think this is going to take us? And therefore, how much are we going to quote? We just have a price list with a standard fixed price for that ebook, and we could quote that to the client straight away. So, I mean, there's lots of evidence that you can make more sales based on how quickly you can quote for the work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it worked well for us, but it works well for our clients as well, because, you know, they've got a fixed price up front. They know how much they're going to pay. If they've got a whole price list, then they can budget according to that price list as well. So it's an easy process for them, and it's an easy process for us.
And I suppose, I mean, talking to the account managers here, I'm guessing that must be particularly helpful for our agency clients. So I'm thinking if they want to pitch something to their clients in turn, it's easy for them to have a very firm idea of what it's going to cost. So they can't, you don't have to kind of come up with an idea, go away, talk to us, go back again. It's just all right there.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, our agency clients, and, you know, every time we change our price list, we will send them the new price list. And then they're able not just to base their quotes of their clients off that, but also to build it into their commercial model, so that our pricing is already built in to the tool that they use to quote to their clients.
So from the very start with the price list, that's still essentially a time-based pricing. It's just a firm price in advance based on time. Is there do we build in a value-based element? Or you had talked about performance-based pricing before.
Yeah. I would love to say that we've moved to value-based pricing. But no, I mean, it's based on time. It's based on an underlying consideration of how much time it's going to take to produce this piece of work. And that's because, I mean, I think it would be really nice to move to a kind of value-based pricing. It would be really nice to say to a client, you're going to get this return out of this piece, and therefore, you know, it's going to cost you this to have it produced, but you're going to get X times that back in ROI. But because the writing is only one part of the whole kind of marketing campaign, that's the only bit we can have control over. We can't guarantee the return if we don't know what they're going to do in terms of execution, you know, if we don't know what the design is going to look like, you know. There's so many other variables that we can't control that it'd be really hard for us to move to pure value-based pricing, I think.
Now, though I suppose you can build a value element into the time, I presume, because if something's more important, we might take longer over it. You know, if something's just a few words, you know, if it's a value proposition for the entire business, say, or a new product, or, you know, an elevator pitch, or, you know, something that they're going to use that's going to be really significant, we might put more consideration into that than we would into, say, a tweet.
Yeah. You
know, and so we'd price differently because we'd take more time because it's more important, I guess.
We'd think about the amount of time we would put into it and price it according to that. Yeah. So things like, right, you know, writing a value proposition for an organisation are not things that are on our standard price list. So that's the kind of thing that if somebody came to us and asked for that, we would think very deeply about, okay, well, you know, what's that going to involve? Actually coming up with something really good and really powerful for them, and then we would price it a bespoke price based on that.
And I guess, I mean, when we've got a price is coming back into how people can save money, does that then make it difficult for, you know, clients who are looking to make their budget go further to find areas where they can make savings? Or what are some of the things that you've noticed our clients doing when they need to make their budget stretch further?
So certain things, like, they might feel like, I mean, if they really wanted to save money, I mean, I don't think it's the right question to ask. It's like, how can I get the most value out of this piece? But, you know, if they really wanted to save money, you could look at things like, they might consider they want a sort of 2,500-3,000-word ebook for which we'd have one price. But, you know, if we feel that we could produce that piece, 1,500, 2,000 words, then they would pay less for it. So we would look, if a client is really price sensitive, wants to save money, we would look at them, okay, well, what are you trying to achieve? And is there a less expensive way of doing that? You know, do we have a different format that we could do that in? I mean, does it need to be an ebook? Could it be a blog? Because, you know, that would be cheaper. So there are certain conversations we would have with people, yeah.
I know that Sarah and Chloe, our senior account managers, are seeing quite often now with certain clients, they'll come to us with something basically written and kind of say, we'd like a copy edit of this,
yes,
rather than getting us to write it from scratch. But I think people are often surprised by how much effort and time that still takes to do, if you're going to do it right.
Well, it can be. I mean, that's just a how long is a piece of string question, because, you know, somebody's written this piece already and they may have written it really well. You know, it may already be almost in a state where it serves the purpose they want it to serve. And so copy editing, it wouldn't necessarily be a very long time consuming job. You know, other times they might come to us with something that somebody's written and, you know, it needs a lot of work doing to it before it tells the right story or, you know, has the right effect on the audience that they want it to have. So copy editing is something that we would price on a case-by-case basis based on the piece of work that they're giving us and what they want it to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if it works, it can be quite cost-effective. But there's a big risk there. I mean, they can't rely on it being cost-effective necessarily, you know, until we've seen it and quoted for it, obviously.
Yeah.
Because if they're not a professional writer, then they're not going to really know whether what they've got needs a little bit of work or a great big lot of work. I mean, a lot of the time we'll get something, they'll go, oh, can we, you know, have a bit of a copy edit? And really what they've given us is a brief.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Actually what we need to do is, okay, we've got all the information, we've got all the arguments, all the stuff rehearsed there that probably saves us a bit of time. Mm. But actually what it is a really detailed brief.
Yeah.
And we actually need to start again.
Yeah.
On the basis of what you've written, if you want this to be really good.
Yeah.
So sometimes they can do that. And then sometimes it just needs a bit of a tweak and a polish and tidying up or standardising with the voice in certain areas. But it's really hard for them, you know, to tell anybody in advance, oh yeah, if you do that, they could end up investing all of this time, either them writing something or getting their stakeholder, their subject matter expert, you know, burn all their brownie points getting them to do so much work, and then it's not something that we can use. It feels so risky when clients get us to do that.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, they have to also trust our judgment.
Yes.
So, you know, if we go back to them and say, look, this really isn't going to work for you as a piece, and what we can do is take this as a brief and we can write from it a piece that works from you. They have to trust that we've got their best interests at heart then, and we're not just trying to sell them, you know, a complete write from scratch project. So, you know, that can be quite a tricky conversation to have, and there has to be kind of a trust relationship there. I think it can be I wouldn't advise clients to look at that as a kind of cost saving thing, but it is a really useful exercise if they have got a subject matter expert who really knows their stuff but isn't comfortable interviewing on the phone. And is happy to write something, that can be a really good way to get that expert information to us. Mm. And it can work out less expensive if, you know, the subject matter expert has written something that will work as a piece of content and only needs a bit of copy editing from us. But I wouldn't advise it as a kind of cost-saving strategy.
No, it's just if that's the way that works best within your work processes, yeah, and with your team.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it's not often a big part of the job, but one of the ways that I sometimes see clients getting kind of value for money quite well is if, you know, is atomizing content, or where they've got a number of content assets they need to be produced around the same subject, because then we can save money on the briefing time.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, that is one way, definitely, that because it's reducing the time that we spend as well, but we're still getting all of the information that we need. You know, if the client can brief us on one, say, 1-hour call, And from that, we're able to produce a kind of multitude of content for them in various formats, like one large piece and then some atomized pieces. Then they will save there, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something where I know that that Sarah was talking about clients that have, you know, often will work on a white paper. And then based upon that white paper, once we've got approval on the first draft, we can then start to deliver blog posts based on that. We can deliver social posts based on each blog post.
Yeah.
You know, and so you could get, you know, a white paper, three blog posts, nine social posts.
Yeah.
Maybe even an infographic or a video script all out of a 1 hour briefing.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
all of those still need writing, so there's still a good amount of writing time. But certainly you can save on the briefing time. And then you've got, you know, if you've got the same writer or writers working across all of those things, then it's really nice and consistent as well.
Yeah.
And they can sort of all play out as kind of a campaign or as a suite of content. You know, they can go down and do promotional emails and stuff.
Yeah.
As well, do like a nurture campaign around them.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also, I mean, that's just really good practice as well, because, you know, once you've got your white paper, you need to promote it. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it's not going to deliver you the returns that you were hoping to get from it. So, you know, why wouldn't you kind of, you know, maximise your efficiencies and get all of that promotional content written at the same time so that you get the maximum amount of traffic and the maximum amount of return from your paper?
Mm. Do you think there are areas where clients are tempted to save money where they definitely shouldn't? Corners that should not be cut.
Yes. I definitely do. I mean, not every client. I mean, clients vary a lot. and a lot of them are just very aware of the value of good copy and good content, and they're willing to invest the money and invest the time on their own part as well to produce a really good piece. And then there are others who are price sensitive and who are looking for ways to, well, I mean, it's like you said about the CMI, you know, they want to produce more content for less budget. And so they are looking for ways to do that. Mm. So I just don't think it's the right way to go about it. I think for every piece of copywriting and every piece of content, the question shouldn't be how much is this going to cost me, but it should be how much value can I get from this if it's produced really well.
Absolutely, because the thing is, you know, you can very quickly start to damage the quality of what you're producing. Yeah. You know, so for example, although we might be able to save a client a bit of money by doing, you know, briefing on a number of things all at once, mm-hmm. reducing the length or number of briefing calls, for example, so that then the writer's not so well briefed.
Yeah, exactly.
For example, like, well, do we really need all of these calls? Do we really need to talk about this in detail? Yeah, we really do.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, particularly if it's a case study or something, yeah, a separate call with your customer would be brilliant, you know, and will always, always deliver value, both in terms of, you know, getting the customer's voice into the piece, but, you know, also the quality of the writing that we can deliver going forwards. You know, those are always false savings.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. And you may be talking about something like 100, 150 quid difference.
Yeah.
Between a piece that is just completely generic and gets you nothing in return at all, and a piece that, you know, has that unique view from the customer or has the unique view from the subject matter expert, or we've had a bit of extra time to research around it, and therefore is unique and original and interesting and compelling, and, you know, gets you sales conversations, new contacts, new engagements. You know, there's no comparison between the two.
Hmm. So how can people then add value? How do they get more value from the content that we produce for them?
How can our clients get more value from the mm-hmm. content? To me, it's about investing the time in it from their side.
Mm-hmm.
So investing the time to think up front before they even talk about it. Say, what is it we want to create here? You know, why are we creating it? What purpose do we want it to serve? You know, what value do we think this is going to bring to our customers? And having all of that in mind before they bring, I mean, there's often quite a sense of, oh, let's create some content for content's sake. And there's not much thought of, you know, what are we going to create that's actually going to have an impact out there in the world? So definitely investing the time up front to think about what they really need, and then investing the time. And it need not be a lot of time, but some time in you know, getting the right people to speak to us. So getting the subject matter experts, getting the customers, if it's a case study, and, you know, just making sure that we have access to the best information that we can have to produce a really good piece for them.
There's a lot of getting the stakeholders in order as well. Isn't it?
Yes.
where, you know, as part of that briefing process of understanding who's going to contribute to the piece, who's going to have a say in the sign-off, so that the value of the piece doesn't get diminished through a tortuous sign-off process that then maybe takes so long that they end up incurring extra cost even.
Yeah.
You know, and actually the thing can be quite clear. So it's in terms of maximising the value, if we can go through a fairly formal-ish briefing process with a client and ask them those hard questions at the start, then that will help to deliver more value later.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think the clearer the brief is up front, and if all of the stakeholders are in agreement with the brief up front, that really helps. Mm. And something else that we do, if it's like a longer piece, we'll do an outline based on the brief. So that's really us reflecting back to the client. Okay, you've briefed us on this, therefore we think that this is the kind of structure of the piece that we're going to produce. Do you agree with this? And that's a really good opportunity to just make sure that we're going in the right direction and getting them the piece that they want before we go too far into first draft and then they don't quite like that. And then, you know, one stakeholder likes it, but another one doesn't, and they're disagreeing between them, and then you get into like 8-9 rounds of amends, you know, that's when things start to go wrong. So the more agreement and consensus there is up front, the more efficient the process.
And they really need to, I guess, get those stakeholders to engage early in the process, you know, because it's a classic thing, you know, stakeholders often will just like not engage until it's very nearly the finished thing, and then they'll tell you what they don't like.
Yes, and we don't like that.
So is that thing?
Speaking from bitter experience.
Very bitter experience. But I think that's the thing for marketers listening, isn't it? Because it's very easy early on. If people aren't really paying attention, it feels like stuff is kind of going through the sign-off process really easily.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, it might just be because everyone's happy, or it might be because people aren't paying attention.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing. Actually, although it's harder for them to do that work earlier in the process, in the briefing process, the outline process, the first stages of amends, you know, that way the thing stays focused and they get value.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, surprisingly, that's all we've got time for in this episode of Good Copy, Bad Copy. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, by all means, do feel free to email us. It's podcast@radix-communications.com. That's easy for me to say. And you can also find us on Twitter at radixcom. That's RADIXCOM. That's 1D. You'll find our website at radix-communications.com. And if you like, you can also sign up for our almost fatally good email updates. Oh, and before I forget, I'll be at B2B InTech in London in March. So if you're coming along, please do come up to me and say hi. It's always nice to have a chat about copywriting and B2B tech marketing content in general. Probably I'll be the one in a jacket and geeky t-shirt. Next time, we'll be talking about email subject lines, which are a dark and scary art. So if you have any questions or tips on that very niche subject, please do drop us a line. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.